doesn't.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
Broadcast from Bad Studios, high on the hills here, Bethlehem, Georgia. Sit back, enjoy the information, the entertainment, and visit us on the internet at www.madstudios.rocks.it.
Brian Williams.
Good evening. For only the third time in his presidency, George W. Bush is about to take questions from reporters in a primetime news conference format tonight from the East Room of the White House. The president has an opening statement on the situation in Iraq, and before his arrival in the East Room, let's hear from our Washington Bureau Chief and the moderator of Meet the Press.
Good evening. And before I take your questions, let me speak with the American people about the situation in Iraq. Coalition forces infiltrated Iraq to incite and organize terror. The violence we have seen is a power grab by these extreme and ruthless elements, carrying out a decision that has already been made and will not change: blackmail and murder on a massive scale. In forums where Iraqis have met to discuss their political future, and in all the proceedings of the Iraqi Governing Council, Iraqis have expressed clear commitments. They want strong protections for individual rights. They want their independence. They want to run us out of Iraq. Now I'd be glad to take your questions.
After 9/11, what would your biggest mistake be, would you say, and what lessons have you learned from it?
I wish you'd give me this written question ahead of time so I could plan for it. I'm sure something will pop in my head here in the midst of this press conference, all the pressure of trying to come up with an answer, but it hadn't yet. Just put me under the spot here, and maybe I'm not as quick on my feet as I should be in coming up with one. One thing is for certain, though, about me. I mean, I'm sick. Thank you all very much.
I don't want to sing another song about another war. I don't want to listen to the TV tell me what we're really fighting for. I don't want to talk about the VP making money off the score. And I don't want to watch the rich while they're killing off the poor. I want something to believe in that doesn't cost another man. I want leaders not deceiving CEOs on CNN. I want a chance for an honest life, not an endless strife for a bigger slice. I want peace, peace. I want peace, peace. I want peace, peace. I want peace, peace. I don't want to lose the sons and the daughters fight in a fight started by the fathers while the mothers take comfort from a statistician and the hollow lies of a politician. No one sane wants war, even the terrified want something more. If we feed the hungry, care for the poor, what could be worth killing for? I want something to believe in that doesn't cost another girl. I want leaders, not deceiving businessmen using up the world. I want a chance for an honest life, not an endless strife for a bigger slice. I want peace, peace. I want peace, peace. I want peace, peace. I want peace, peace. We all need something to believe and we need to believe. Don't want to talk about the common cost. Don't want to cry for a generation lost. We wave the flag, stand tall with pride and look to our leaders to justify the immeasurable loss of those who'll die for a great white lie. Give us something to believe in. Give us something to believe. We need leaders, not deceivers, winning cause we're too naive. We need a chance for an honest life, not an endless strife for a bigger slice. We need peace, peace. We need peace, peace. Give us peace, peace. Give us peace, peace. I want peace, peace. Give me peace, peace. We need peace, peace. Give us peace, peace. Give us peace. Peace. We want peace. Peace.
And here we are in a post-November 3rd world with Bush in power for another 4 years. If you believe the touch screens, if you believe in elections where only the two government-approved candidates are allowed to be mentioned in the media, in the polls, or participate in the presidential debates. Anyhow, I don't think it's complete coincidence my internet connection was cut 5 days before election day, but, you know, I'm still here. I'm out here having to upload my files from truck stops and Kinko's and coffee shops and all sorts of places, but they haven't stopped me yet. And it's about the information. So cover your ears, this may hurt, but for a minute and 29 seconds, we have a little trigger
Daisy
to put in. Sorry about that. I know that wasn't very easy to listen to, but, you know, when those who seek to control the flow of information think they can just cut me off and hold my domain names hostage, well, you know, we'll see what happens. 2004 is not over yet. In the end, justice, freedom, truth will be victorious. And now, sit back, get your notebook out, and take some notes. Here's a little information the mass media isn't gonna give you. Here's a few songs you ain't gonna hear on your radio. Yeah. Mad Studios, in cooperation with Bush Out the Door in 2004.org, is happy to bring it to you.
Peaceful efforts to disarm the Iraqi regime have failed again. And again, weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. This is not a question of authority. It is a question of will. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein and his sons must leave Iraq within 48 hours. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction. Their refusal to do so will result in military conflict. At a time of our choosing. Weapons of mass, destruction.
The government has decided to commit Australian forces because we believe it is right. It is lawful, and it's in Australia's national interest.
And again.
Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass destruction.
Speaker, sir, with your permission, I should like to make a statement. Today we published, a 50-page dossier. Detailing the history of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction.
And again.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Terrorists on the run. We're keeping them on the run. One by one, the terrorists are learning the meaning of American justice. Destruction. One by one, the terrorists are learning the meaning of American justice. American justice. Destruction.
If I die tomorrow, maybe in a speeding car. You know I like to travel with my notebook and guitar. There's too many cars out there. Not enough train tracks. I tried flapping my wings, but I just don't have the knack. Don't talk to me of accidents in this great democracy. America will be the death of me. If I die tomorrow, my body blown apart by some child with a shotgun, raging fire in his heart. Killed in some concrete jungle war zone by some kid who never learned to write. Raised by desperation and surviving the long night. In the wrong place at the wrong time in this land of opportunity. America will be the death of me. If I die tomorrow, pipe bomb beneath my seat, or from drowning in the bathtub, choking on a piece of meat. You can rest assured I did not mean to slip upon the grass. It was no one that I knew who rammed the plunger up my ass. It's just that I was told to speak freely. America will be the death of me. Die tomorrow, and my death will not give pause to the coroner who may say that I died of natural cause. Lungs black from breathing city air, cancer coursing through my veins. I'll be glowing in the dark from the radiation rain. So here's a toast to Uncle Sam and to mortality and to America, which will be the death of me.
There's anthrax in the envelope I opened in my dream. The sky is red and little kids are running, screaming in the street. I tried to run and save them, but I had molasses feet. I keep having nightmares and I'm scared to go to sleep. If you fall in, I'll jump down. Gates to heaven here on earth will open. open up again. If you fall in, I'll jump down and touch your face while we're both sinking, stinking, thinking we won't drown. You are my friend, and what we're dealing's too important for our lives to end quite yet.
People are saying they're supporting the soldiers are at the pinnacle of ignorance because our soldiers are walking along contaminated ground. That's why Mr.
Was it a big lie or just a cover to justify your invasion of Iraq and to remove its regime?
As this operation continues, those weapons will be identified, found, along with the people who have produced them.
General Frank set the bar very high for finding weapons of mass destruction. He said there's no doubt that they have them. And, you know, a CENTCOM official the other day conceded to me that in some ways, finding those weapons and proving to the world that Iraq had them is even more important than getting rid of Saddam Hussein. There's simply no way that this battle can be called a success if the U.S. can't prove beyond a doubt that Saddam had those weapons, and none have been launched yet and none have been found.
I'll see you along the trail.
It is amazing how many journalists were in Iraq and how little information we got about what was actually happening there, because the Pentagon brilliantly embedded the journalists in the military and convinced the journalists that they were associated. In fact, they were part of military units. They kind of were out there acting as warriors themselves.
And we'll see if phase two or phase three maybe of some sort of battlefield prep happens, or maybe something else.
Well, clearly, as promised by the Pentagon and the administration for a period of months now, in the event of war, it would be the most open and watched and seen and videotaped war.
We're going to bring that up for you and try to give you a sense as we zoom in on Baghdad through the keyhole machine. If you could put that up for me, we'll get there. That's actually the wrong machine as well.
We know of movement on Basra, but there are no cameras there.
As we look at these quite compelling pictures of the night sky,
you're seeing now a live picture from Baghdad.
The Navy is letting these pictures come back live. Very important the way the administration has brought much more openness to us than in the past.
U.S. reporters were embedded.
Embedded. We're the leading edge. We're the cutting edge. That is, the 7th Cavalry's the cutting edge.
What do you make of all of this stuff with these journalists riding along with the forces? You didn't do it that way back then. Now, what's your sense of it? This a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. If you'd asked me that 15, 20 years ago, I might have had a different answer, but the proof here is...
The U.S. media acts as a spokesperson, a mouthpiece for the Pentagon, even to the extent that we're seeing the phraseology that's put out by the U.S. government PR machine repeated over and over again on every single media outlet.
U.S. surgical bombing,
a strategic strike,
targets of opportunity,
target of opportunity,
a target of opportunity,
Iraqi leadership decapitated,
decapitation,
decapitate,
bombing on the scale that will shock and awe,
shock and awe,
shock and awe,
shock and awe.
If you have to ask, is this shock and awe, you're not seeing it. Because when it happens, it will be absolutely, positively, no doubt of what you're seeing. So if you're saying, oh, that looks, could that possibly be it? No, it's not, because it will be so overwhelming, so ferocious in its scope and magnitude.
It's like a brief intermission in some terrible but real movie.
Exactly the case.
About weapons of mass destruction and freeing Iraqi people.
I think some of the people are probably, you know, really very nice people that are very misguided. And I think many of them are really stuck in the 60s.
The oil there is the Iraqi people's oil, right? We're going to take it from them. We might buy it. I mean, is it bad that we protect their asset for them?
So, yeah. I think that from our standpoint, I think that we have every right, once we've gone in there and we've done what we've done, to be able to recoup our costs.
Yeah. Recoup our costs.
Yeah.
For bombing them.
Yeah.
But if there are no weapons of mass destruction found in Iraq,
that would be a problem.
They attacked us. And I mean they in a very general sense. I think that if you look at a region and you have, what, 98% of them came from the Middle East or some part of the Middle East, that I think that they no matter what we do, they would always hate us.
It's Middle Eastern people.
Well, I think that from a standpoint of, you know, why are we there? We're there because we are making a claim that terrorism is rampant in this world, and we are putting a stop to it. And, you know, to use a kind of a term from, you know, a past movie, you know, there's a new sheriff in town, and we're not putting up with the BS anymore.
They know they're being liberated. This is not conquering a country. This is liberating a country.
We don't want to take out targets that we're going to need to use to help the economic prosperity of Iraq as we finish this war.
We have no ambition in Iraq.
Iraqi oil fields are estimated to be worth more than $112 billion.
That's our only reason for being out here, is to restore these wells so that we can restore the economy of this great nation and these great people.
The way Bechtel and Halliburton get these contracts is their friends in high places. These are companies that are extremely well connected to the U.S. government. Halliburton is, you know, a major funder of the Republican Party. In fact, their former chief executive is our vice president. Dick Cheney was the chief executive of Halliburton. Riley Bechtel is the chief executive of Bechtel. Riley Bechtel was appointed to advise the president, George Bush Jr., on export, on his export council. 7 weeks after he was appointed to that position, they won perhaps the biggest export bonanza for the United States. That's the rebuilding of Iraq. As an advisor with the ear of the president, he gets the first contract, which could be worth, people say, as much as $100 billion down the road. Companies like Bechtel and Halliburton definitely play an important role in influencing foreign policy and defense policy, or you could say offense policy in the United States. The federal government consults with these companies before they go to war, and so determines the nature of the war. So, for example, in October of last year, 2002, the federal government, Dick Cheney's office, met with a bunch of companies, including Halliburton and ExxonMobil and Chevron Texaco, to talk about how they would take over the Iraqi oil fields. Undoubtedly, they looked to profit from it, and they definitely steered the way the war was conducted in their private meetings with Dick Cheney and the U.S. administration.
Sent Thursday, March 27th at 11:30 p.m.
This is Sam Green. I work with a bunch of people at Bechtel, and we hate you. You are on the wrong side of this war. 71% of the country supports Bush. You've got the wrong idea. We want you to stop demonstrating, stop bothering us. And your numbers are decreasing every day. The war is going forward, and it is not going to stop. So give it up, okay? You are on the wrong side. In fact, you are aiding and abetting Saddam Hussein. Aiding and abetting. You are accessories to murder. Give it up. Wrap it up. Go away.
No, Sam Green. We won't go away. Freedom still speaks despite your rigged elections, your endless war, your death and destruction. Yeah, you're the producers. You're producing a lot around the world. A lot of resentment for America, that's what you're producing. Yeah. Just going over and attacking the Iraqi people and trying to take over their country. And for what? Yeah, based on what? Lies, nothing but lies. And what's the end result? What's your end game plan? Do you have one? NASA no longer flies in space. We just borrowed another $800 billion on top of our already huge national debt. How about instead of a few smart bombs, we produce a few smart kids in this country? What about that, Mr. Sam Green?
Bomb drop, more than 1,000 in all, was precision guided.
It has much smarter, if you will, much smarter weapons.
As you well know, these cruise missiles are very accurate.
One thing to point out about these precision weapons,
it's expected to totally sell out.
In the Gulf War I, about 10% of the weapons were precision or guided either by laser or by satellites.
The gold alone, that's 4.5 grams, mm-hmm. at today's market, that's your $99 right there.
This time around, it's just the opposite. 10% are so-called dumb bombs, 90% precision. It's amazing how the weaponry has changed over the 12-year period. This is a plane that is not easily seen by radar. These bombs that we're talking about, mini bunker busters with about a 500-pound warhead on them, designed with a time fuse so they penetrate concrete.
This president is very confident about the military's capabilities to deliver strikes inside Baghdad while keeping civilian casualties to a minimum.
Coalition forces will make every effort to spare innocent civilians from harm.
When you ignore the fact that we've dropped thousands of bombs on cities the size of Los Angeles, that thousands of innocent people have been killed that aren't even accounted for yet, the destruction to the environment, the humanitarian costs of the war that are still unknown, the reality is it's not liberation. And who's going to profit? It's going to be U.S. corporations with close ties to the Bush administration that are already rushing into Iraq to take over Iraqi resources.
Are some of the spots that we've heard, there are protests, we have Bush and Powell, Beeland Market, Pine and Sansom, Broadway and Battery, we also have now Montgomery and Clay, Van Ness and Fell, as you saw, Sansom and Sutter, Broadway and Battery, and of course 5th and Market. We had earlier a 5th and Mission, so all over the city and now spreading out into the Mission District. You can see one there at Valencia at 16th, there was a demonstration there, and we have word that there was a demonstration actually at Van Ness and Lombard. So you can tell that the protesters are fanning out throughout the city.
Just some of the potential weapons police seized today, enough to fill a hardware store.
I've been around for 30 years. This is the largest number of arrests that we've made. This, to me, is the largest demonstration in terms of disruption that I've seen.
A group of Black Bloc people was last seen at Sansom and Bush, and they're on the move, and we're not sure if we've got anybody with them currently. Could you try to find these Black Bloc people running around? 10-4, that's what we'll do.
I mean, we're getting beat up all over the city here.
He wants to cover with their bikes.
10-4, do you need help? Well, there's more of them than there are us.
Get here, because this is where the shit's going to come in.
10-4.
We just don't have any troops to send to you, Tom.
Nuclear arms are a full arsenal of chemical and biological weapons. Saddam Hussein could resume his ambitions of conquest in the Middle East and create deadly havoc in that region. And this Congress and the American people must recognize another threat. Evidence from intelligence sources, secret communications, and statements by people now in custody reveal that Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda. Secretly and without fingerprints, he can provide one of his hidden weapons to terrorists or help them develop their own. Before September the 11th, many in the world believed that Saddam Hussein could be contained. Chemical agents, lethal viruses, and shadowy terrorist networks are not easily contained. Imagining those 19 hijackers with other weapons and other plans, this time armed by Saddam Hussein. Take one vial, one canister, one crate, slip to this country to bring a day of horror like none we have ever known. We will do everything in our power to make sure that that day never comes. Some have said
We must not act until the threat is imminent. Since when have terrorists and tyrants announced their intentions, politely putting us on notice before they strike? If this threat is permitted to fully and suddenly emerge, all actions, all words, and all recriminations would come too late.
I don't know anybody that I can think of who has contended that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons.
The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists. A group he calls his nuclear mujahideen, his nuclear holy warriors, facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
I don't know anybody in any government or any intelligence agency who suggested that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons. That's fact number one.
The smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Now, we've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September the 11th.
Before September the 11th, many in the world believed that Saddam Hussein could be contained. We face a second wave of terrorist attacks in the form of deadly anthrax, biological, and nuclear weapons.
The regime is seeking a nuclear bomb.
They were as wrong as they are evil.
Ask GW what he's gonna do. His lips are moving, he has no clue. Keeping promises, don't it do? And everybody's nightmares are coming true.
GW wants another war. GW's just a corporate whore. GW wants another war, cause GW's a Nazi.
Ask Dick Cheney what he's gonna do. He starts a sneering, you know you're screwed. He's been known to keep a secret or two, and now he's keeping them all from you.
Cheney wants another war. Halliburton's gonna score.
Stop the show, baby.
we have to make sure that this is the only war that Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld start.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You know that the 9/11 families pushed to have a commission, an independent commission, to look into what happened on 9/11, and the Bush administration stalled, tried to make it not happen. 9/11 widows continued to push. It came into being. Bush appointed the chair, Henry Kissinger, probably the person most responsible for U.S. foreign policy in the last several decades, to investigate his own foreign policy. And because of business conflicts, was replaced by Tom Keene, the former governor of New Jersey, and Vice Chair Lee Hamilton, a former congressman from Indiana, who himself could be called Mr. Cover-Up. He's batting 0-for-4 in terms of finding any government malfeasance in terms of Iran-Contra, the October surprise, and other government incidences. So if you wanted somebody to hide what you were doing, he is the man to be the vice chair of the commission. And as this freeform diagram shows, the most of the commissioners, and I've only listed the top ones on the left-hand side, have conflicts of interest with people in the executive branch and interrelationships with oil, which is really at the heart of the story. And because of those conflicts, they certainly can't be expected to uncover what really happened on 9/11. And if you've watched any of the hearings, how many people have seen it? Some of them? A little bit, okay. You'll notice that some of the really hot topics have not, will not be discussed, are totally avoided. And these include Bush's day on 9/11, that morning in the classroom. Yesterday we showed the video of Bush sitting at the Booker Elementary School in Sarasota reading a story about a pet goat. He went into the classroom knowing that one plane had crashed into the tower, that there were hijackings in process. He was told in a photo op on camera that a second plane had crashed. He was sat there for another 5 to 10 minutes talking to the children. If he had acted, he could have saved many lives in the second tower and elsewhere. And we know that Secretary Rumsfeld was sitting in the Pentagon talking to a number of congressmen about Star Wars. General Myers was in a congressional Senate office talking. He didn't get the word until after the first plane had crashed. Somebody had to hand him a note. This is your tax money, not at work. So I believe it was an executive-level stand-down. These people were AWOL, and this is something that the commission will not even touch. Secondly, this week, the hearings, the 9/11 commission hearings received a lot of attention. You may have seen Clark on... all over this new book. And what did the Bush administration know when? When, in fact, these hearings this week were on counterterrorism. He was in that position for the past at least, I think, 2 decades, when the U.S., CIA, along with Pakistani intelligence and Saudi Arabian money, funded Islamic terrorism in Afghanistan. And not a question, of course, was asked on that, how the U.S. role in creating the current enemy and those who allegedly masterminded 9/11. Something else you won't hear in the hearings are the number of hijackers who are alive and well, living in Saudi Arabia, and anything really of any relevance that would reveal the story. And the real reason, of course, is because of the makeup of the commission and the conflicts of interest. If you look at the makeup of the commission, you will see that four of the sitting members, and if you add in Kissinger and George Mitchell, who was the original vice chair, are on the Council on Foreign Relations, which has ties to David Rockefeller and the oil interests. So they're not going to rock the boat. At least two, Fred Fielding and the executive director, Phil Zelikow, were on the Bush transition team and put Condoleezza Rice in her current position. They were the ones who either did or didn't hear the Clinton administration's information about terrorism, and so they're investigating themselves. A ridiculous situation. A number of the commissioners have ties to the Saudi Arabian funding mechanisms. The chair, Tom Keene, is a business. He's on the board of Amerita Hess, an oil company, and it's by kind of a long distance kissing cousin relationship. So is Osama bin Laden's brother-in-law in a oil company that's a partner of Amerita Hess. So again, he's investigating the brother-in-law of the alleged terrorist. Jamie Gorelick is with a big Washington law firm that I think still, at least or in the most recent past, had among its clients a number of big Saudi money people. And the list goes on. So the reason, of course, that they won't be really coming out with anything of any value is because of these conflicts of interest, because they all have high-powered jobs. They would never work again in D.C., and or somebody has something on them that if they broke the code of silence would come out. So the real danger, we could ignore the commission, except that people say, well, there's a commission looking into that if you ask a question about 9/11 or why aren't we doing something about it. So it becomes the kind of fallback safe place to say not answer questions. And then when the report is released, which I think is right around the time of the Democratic Convention, definitely before around the time of the Republican Convention, the report, which clearly will follow the lines of the Joint Committee's report, that it was a bureaucratic failure, that somebody didn't tell somebody something, it was an intelligence failure, instead of really looking at who did this and why. And then that will become, like the Warren report, that will become the, again, party official line, and we'll have to go around disproving it. So, and I think that the real value of the commission is, number one, in the impeachment value of these officials who have testified, whether they testify under oath or not, who have lied or covered up, and also the commissioners who are part of the cover-up. And there's possibly some legal action that could be taken against them also.
I would say that besides them doing a total cover-up, the biggest smoking gun is the stand-down of the planes. And somebody who's done just absolutely outstanding work chronicling this is Paul Thompson, who created the complete 9/11 timeline. And I'd like him to just go over the stand-down of the planes. Paul?
Hi there. I want to talk about the stand down really briefly. Before I actually go into that, there are a couple of war games I think are very worth mentioning that were happening on the day of 9/11. One is a war game called Vigilant Guardian that involved NORAD, the the defense agency that was responsible for protecting the United States. And we don't really know exactly what Vigilant Guardian was or what happened regarding 9/11 and Vigilant Guardian. But we do know that there are some flight traffic controllers who have spoken to the media and said that when 9/11 started happening and they got the first notices about the hijacked airplanes, they were not sure if that was part of the war game or if that was something that was happening in real life. So I think this is something that's very important that we should look into and the media should cover. Another war game is there's something called the National Reconnaissance Office in Washington, D.C., and they were having their war game on 9/11 as well, a practice that actually involved a hypothetical scenario of an airplane being flown into their offices in Washington, D.C. That was going to happen at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was an office that's very connected to the CIA. The head of that war game was a CIA agent. And they say that that was canceled because of real events. But, you know, we don't really know. It's another thing that was shrouded in mystery. In fact, we didn't even know about it until about a year later when one of the people involved in it was boasting to the press about this war game. So I just want to preface that there's a lot of very strange things that were happening on that particular day, and we really need to know what was going on with these war games. Now, I want to get really quickly, just run through the very important facts about the stand down. I find it interesting that really this has not been discussed in the media. There was a comment made by a Miami Herald reporter a couple days after 9/11 in the Miami Herald where he said that the slow response of NORAD will be a major issue in the upcoming days. And I'm still waiting. It's been a bit of a while, and we still have not had a public debate or discussion about just why the response was so slow. And again, before I really delve into the facts here, I want to, you to keep two facts in mind that I think are very important. One fact, as Michael Rupert was mentioning the other day, and by the way, I'm using his notes here to do this talk. In the previous year before 9/11, fighter pilots were scrambled on routine intercepts 67 times when there was some sort of plane that went off course or there was some sort of problem. 67 times they were scrambled up into the air. So this was a very common thing that had been going on for years. It's very routine to scramble after aircraft when they go off course or when you lose transponder signal, when you lose radio contact. That's just what NORAD does. And the second fact that I think is very important to keep in mind is that NORAD had guaranteed, and when the NORAD folks spoke in front of the Independent Commission, they also mentioned this, they guaranteed that if they're told that they have to scramble after some plane, that they can get any fighter off the ground 24 hours a day, armed, within 15 minutes from one of their NORAD bases. Now, 9/11 itself was an event that lasted about 2 hours from start to finish, from the first hijack until the plane crashed into the ground. They could scramble planes within 15 minutes. So you think it would be very obvious that by the time the last plane is flying in Pennsylvania, flight 93, that of course there would be all kinds of fighters in the air, there would be all kinds of fighters around that plane. But in fact, that wasn't the case. So something was wrong. There was something very wrong about what happened that day and the slow fighter response. Now I'll just run really fast through some of the actual numbers, because we know the first hijack began at 8:13 in the morning, and that was flight 11. And flight 11, the pilots there were doing some routine communications with the air traffic control, and they stopped talking. There was suddenly no response. And that was at 8:13. One air traffic controller later said that at that moment, he knew that that plane had been hijacked. And if he didn't know, in the next minute, the pilot hit the talk back button, and the controllers could actually hear the hijacker in the cockpit at that time. So there was really no doubt. And then as the moments go on, a few minutes later, the transponder turns off. Very early in the morning, just a few minutes after 8:13, they should have known that there was a hijack there. There should have been a fighter plane scrambled immediately. But what actually happens? According to NORAD's own numbers, it wasn't until 8:40, so that's 26 minutes after 8:14. It wasn't until 26 minutes later that NORAD was notified that there was a hijacking. And then you'd think that after they'd been notified, they would immediately scramble the airplanes. But no, 16 more minutes passed before the scramble order went out. So what was happening here? In fact, the pilots at the NORAD Air Force Base around 8:40, the same time NORAD was notified, they got some calls from people saying that there was something going on. Someone told one of the fighter pilots, quote, "This is the real deal." So he knew when he got into his airplane that this was not some kind of exercise. So he was already being told, and yet the scramble order still wasn't happening. So it wasn't, in fact, was not until 8:52 that the fighters finally took off. So it took them, after the notice, it took them even longer to finally get their act together and get off the ground. So we have the first flight hijacked 8:13, and it's not until 8:52. The plane that they're going after is already crashed in the World Trade Center by the time they even get the fighters off the ground. Now you might say, okay, well that was the first plane. So, you know, you can cut them some slack because they didn't understand what was going on. It was the first time. But then, of course, we know that there were these other planes that were hijacked, too. Now, I'm going to skip because in the interest of time, I'm going to skip past Flight 175. And I'm going to go straight to the Flight 77, the one that crashed into the Pentagon, supposedly, as someone pointed out. Now, that's a very, very interesting example, again, of delayed fighter reaction. We don't really know exactly when that plane was hijacked, but around 8:50, we have the last radio contacts with that plane. So certainly by that time, and with all everything else that's going on by 8:50, certainly you think people would be quick to notify NORAD and say, here's a problem. But in fact, it's not until 9:24 that NORAD is notified that that plane has been hijacked. So that is 34 minutes later after that plane. We're in the middle of a national emergency. Two planes have crashed into the World Trade Center, and still we don't have notification for 34 minutes. So, excuse me just a minute here. Sorry. Another thing I find very interesting about this plane, this Flight 77, is that just a few days ago there was a new article. Finally, for the first time, there's some journalists looking at this story again. There's a new article in the Wall Street Journal that mentions some of these times. And they noted, and I found this really shocking, I think you will as well, that the fighters that did eventually take off, even many more minutes later, when they finally did take off after Flight 77, it was after the plane had actually already crashed when they were finally getting their act together, they flew below supersonic speed, and they flew over the ocean. They were several hundred miles south of Washington, D.C., so they kind of swung out over the ocean below supersonic speed. Why? Because there were civilian regulations about noise restrictions. They were trying not to disturb the neighbors and the towns below. So they're, you know, in the middle of this national emergency, they're flying below supersonic speed. This is the official story. The pilots in the first case, the pilots that were going after the first flights in New York City, many minutes earlier, half an hour earlier, they had been told the real deal. So those pilots didn't mess around. They flew as fast as they could, according to the pilots themselves. But here, so many minutes later, these pilots are flying below supersonic speed. In fact, had they been directly trailing the hijacked plane, they would have been going slower than the hijacked plane. They would have never been able to catch up to it. And then finally, the last flight, we have Flight 93, which is the one that eventually crashed into Pennsylvania countryside. According to NORAD's own statistics, they were notified that that plane was hijacked at 9:16. And the plane finally crashed into the ground at 10:06. So do the numbers there. That's nearly an hour where that plane is flying around. And according to the official government story, which I'm not sure is true, but according to their story, they say that there had been a fighter that was scrambled after that plane, but had still not caught up to it when it crashed into the ground. So here we are, nearly 2 hours after this whole incident has begun, and they still haven't been able to get a fighter at 10:06 to the last plane. Now that is, I think, really unfathomable to imagine that we could have had air defenses that slow. And I'll let you make your own conclusions, but I just want to present the facts here as to why we say that, why people say that there is a stand down on 9/11. Thank you very much.
Fire! Radioactive! Michael Franti! Legacy and LZ in the place! Gone International with Sly and Robbie on the track! Drums and bass! Wicked and wild! Understand the whole reason why you're telling us all that we need to unify. Rally round the flag and beat the drums of war. Sing the same old songs, we heard them all before. You're telling me it's unpatriotic, but I call it when I see it. When I see it's idiotic. The tears of one mother are the same as any other. Drop food on your kids while you're murdering their fathers. But don't bother to show it on CNN. Brothers and sisters, don't believe them that it's war against evil. It's really just revenge engaged on the poor by the same rich men. Fight terrorists wherever they be found. But why you not bombing Tim McVeigh's hometown? You can say what you want, propaganda television, but all bombing is terrorism. Chase down all our enemies. We can bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces. But we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa, we may even find a solution to hunger and disease. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Fire in disguise, many people died, no one even really knows why. They told lies in the vision of fear. We yelled and cried, no one listened for years. We're like, who put us there? And who's responsible? Well, there's no debating, cause if they ask me, I'll say it's big corporations. World Trade Organization, trilateral action, international sanctions. Satan, seems like it'll be an endless price tag of wars, tremendous. And most disturbingly, the death toll is so horrendous. So I send this to those that say they defend us. Send us into harm's way, we should all make a remembrance that this is bigger than terrorism. Blood is blood is blood in them. Love is true vision. Who would listen? How many songs it takes for you to see? You can bomb the world to pieces, you can't bomb it in the peace.
We can chase down all our enemies. Run, run, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces. But we can't bomb it into peace. And I sing love to the peaceful, yo. I sing power to the peaceful. And I sing love to the peaceful, yo. We may even find the solution to hunger and disease.
104.1.
Now, I was campaigning in Chicago, and somebody asked me, is there ever any time where the budget might have to go into deficit? I said, only if we were at war or had a national emergency or were in recession. Little did I realize we'd get the trifecta.
Over there, they're jumping out the windows, I guess, because they're trying to see themselves. I don't know. And I don't know. Everybody just doesn't know where to go. They won't let... Everything is blocked off. You can't even... They're telling us to get out, but there's nowhere to go. And then I heard that another plane hit. And if you go over by there, you can see the people jumping out the window. They're jumping out the window right now. Oh, my God.
I was in one World Trade Center.
And what was it like in there? Did they start evacuating?
Yeah, because as soon as you got hit, I was thrown to a window. So I was very lucky to get out. There's a lot of people that didn't get out. There's a lot of people coming down the stairs, burnt up. It's bad.
You know, I was campaigning in Chicago, and somebody asked me, is there ever any time where the budget might have to go into deficit? I said, only if we were at war or had a national emergency or were in recession. Little did I realize we'd get the trifecta.
The Earth? Oh, the Earth will be gone in just a few seconds.
Tell them to turn off CNN. Tell them to turn off Fox News. The war is not in Iraq. It's on my block. The next communique is going to be posted at IMC. Peace.